What you're seeing in 2025 is motivation turned to distress. Many of them can't hang on, but there's still plenty of boomers that have 2, 3, 4 homes that are like, okay, look, I think my crappy 2-bedroom is worth $700,000. I'm going to wait until, you know, it's better.
That's right.
Everybody keeps telling them, telling them mortgage rates are going down. And so that's what my hope was. But we seem to be stuck this morning. You know, we were seeing, it was like last week, we got a little bit, you know, it was floating lower, lower, lower. But this morning, it could be different right now. We went back to that 4.3 or very close to it. And so I don't think the Fed has no control. And right now, the bond market doesn't seem to care about this theoretical upcoming cut.
Melody Wright, M3. Melody, did I get that right? Your Substack right?
You did indeed. Thank you.
To all my viewers and listeners out there, I got a lot of requests from Melody. And actually, Melody, to be candid, I'm a little intimidated because of you, and you're getting pretty big if you're not there already. That's number one. And then number two, this is an intimidating topic for me because I know very little about it. So I want to educate myself and my listeners, but I know the importance of it when it comes to the general economy, the domestic economy here. And also, I go back to the 2007-ish timeframe. I remember that very vividly. It had a big shape on my career and my process, if you would. So I want to talk about that. And so let's start with that. Where are we at in this cycle? And it seems like this has given me feelings of 2007-ish, if you would.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as everyone says, you know, history does not repeat, but it rhymes. And, you know, as for me as well, Andy, that's my framework because I fell into mortgage in 2006, September 2006. And so where we are kind of from a delinquency perspective, we've kind of been sitting on the edge of Q4 2006 for about a year, because what happened last year so there's all different loan programs. And let me just start out by saying what some people may not know is that the government, in one form or another, be it the government-sponsored enterprises, Fannie and Freddie, FHA, other programs, they own the majority of the mortgages out there, almost 85%. And this is a big shift and change since that time period you're referencing. I refer to it as the GFC, or the Great or Global Financial Crisis, whatever you want that G to stand for. And so basically, back then, you know, we had a lot of risky lending that was being done by the private sector, by the banks, actually, right? But what happened is post that, the banks really pulled back due to Basel III requirements. They didn't want to hold mortgages anymore. And so the government stepped in to keep the market going. And these non-banks, basically what they do, like Rocket, UW, those companies, they will originate your loan and then they immediately turn around and sell it off to Fannie or Freddie or somebody like that.
Or Wall Street, right?
Or Wall Street, you know, and then that's another very, something we'll talk about. We can do it right now. Something Fannie and Freddie also do, and FHA do, is they sell off their non-performing loans to Wall Street, to hedge funds, to people, so that their delinquency doesn't look that bad right now as well. And what happens to those loans is they sort of go in a black hole. To hedge funds who then maybe sell those out to even smaller investors. And so we don't get credit reporting on many of these.
Okay. Can I interrupt you first?
Absolutely.
Can we find some terms? FHA. What is FHA?
So it's the Federal Housing Administration. You know, I always used to refer, always thought it stood for a first time home buyer, but it does not. It's the Federal Housing Administration. And the GSEs are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so, and this is, thank you for stopping me, because Andy, FHA is a key to this story. And so back during the time that you and I, you know, remember with horror, FHA was a very small percentage of the market, only about 7% or so. Well, fast forward to today, what you had was just record unaffordability even before COVID, okay? And so the government needed to get people into housing because that securitization machine, which if you've watched The Big Short, everybody can kind of understand that concept now. They package up these loans and sell them off as securities. So they needed that to keep going. And so what they started doing was bringing in riskier and riskier borrowers, as well as there's all kinds of generous down payment assistance programs that really got juiced with the COVID American Rescue Act stimulus. And so FHA went from about 7% of the market to anywhere between 13 to 15% of the market, which is exactly the size of that private subprime market last time around.
Okay, time out. Okay. I want to get the time right. So it went from 7% of the market. You said 15% of the market when?
13 to 15%. It just grew from that time period to today.
Today.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I'm interrupting you, but I
go ahead, please.
This is just relabeled. This is the new subprime.
Correct. I call it government subprime.
We are screwed. Go ahead. Okay.
So FHA. So
I haven't heard it. They call it FHA now instead of the subprime market. Got it. Okay.
Right. I refer to it as government subprime because that's exactly what it is. You can go as low as 580 credit scores with compensating factors. And here's the crazy thing. We know that credit scores were inflated during COVID because of eviction moratoriums, mortgage forbearance, student loans not reporting. And mm-hmm. So you had these inflated credit scores, and there's all kinds of studies. The Fed has done a study on this. This is the reality. This is why so many people had their credit score drop when they started reporting student loans again. So basically, FHA really went after that risky borrower, same risky borrower from before. And we know that, you know, the stripper, the investors, well, they used FHA back then too, illegally, is what they'll do. So FHA, you only have to have a 3.5% down. And even then, like I said, there are down payment assistance programs. And so what happened is investors use this program illegally, and they claim that they're going to be an owner-occupant. And this is going to be their primary residence. But really what it is they bought it to do long-term rental or short-term rental. Most everybody changed to short-term rental because they thought they could get more money based on ridiculous underwriting tools that weren't based in reality. If you think about what happened at the end of the last crisis, the foreclosure crisis just kind of disappeared, right? Some ways. Well, that was because Wall Street came in at the behest of the agencies, Fannie and Freddie and FHA, and they just started buying up all these properties at auction. I went to those auctions, and I can tell you, everybody has to kind of get out this idea that the banks want to foreclose. Nobody wants to foreclose. It is one of the most expensive processes. So these banks were just like, thank you, please take them, whatever, just take them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so then that kind of started a trend where every mom and pop was like, well, hey, you know, I'm going to do that, because more and more the social contract really got broken during COVID, but it was getting broken before then, where you work for a company, there was no loyalty, you know, they'd be like, goodbye, you're gone. Mm-hmm. And so people were like, okay, as well as wages just weren't keeping up, right? And so they're like, how am I going to get mine? You know, what I need some kind of plan. And so many people got thinking it's passive income, which is hilarious. Being a landlord is not a passive job. And so everybody piled in, you know, their Kardashians were, you know, the biggest real estate influencers. They're turning houses, HGTV, all of this. Okay, we hit COVID, and you had YouTube influencers just pop up everywhere, you know, invest in multifamily, invest in short-term rental, Airbnb. And then Airbnb was really smart about what they did. I don't agree with it. I'm just saying. They would limit the amount of listings that, so when you search, let's say you are going to San Diego and you search Airbnb, they're going to show you 1,000 listings. And so every host, everybody thinks, well, 1,000, okay, 1,001 in San Diego, you know, I'll do fine. No, there are 15,000 short-term rentals in San Diego right now. We don't need 15,000 mini hotels. And so anyway, everybody piles into this. They use these FHA loans illegally. This is what you've heard. This is, you know, the Lisa Cook nonsense, right? This is what they're accusing her of doing. By the way, everybody does it. I mean, I can tell you everybody does it. It's the biggest, you know, secret in mortgage. And no one has really been enforcing this at all, which they should. And the Fed actually put out a paper in January 23, the Philly Fed, that said, hey, guys, you know, investing in real estate didn't stop after the GFC and the fraud didn't stop. And by the way, anytime you have investors participating like this, it's about 30% likely there's fraud, you know, like 30% of this origination is fraud. And so anyway, what happens? Okay, June of 23, we start to see mortgage delinquency in FHA, like really bad delinquency. And I'm pounding the table. Nobody cares. You know, basically, they're not paying attention. Everybody argue with me. It's just a small percentage. I'm like, oh, you mean as small as subprime was. So, you know, this is, we need to start paying attention. Well, we come around to 2024, election year, and they could not have this happen. You know, you remember we were being lied to about the economy. And so Biden administration comes out with this crazy loan modification and workout. Where, so, you know, back during the day, when I worked at a big top five originator and servicer, when you did a loan modification, you had to re-underwrite them. You had to check, look at their financials. If they couldn't do it, it didn't make sense. They were denied, unfortunately. But listen, they can't afford it. They can't afford it. You know, back then we broke contract law. It's a big reason we are where we are today. Well, so what this program did is you didn't have to, so during COVID, you didn't have to apply for a workout. In fact, you didn't even have to call the servicer for the forbearance. They just put you on it automatically. And then when your forbearance ended, they would send you a modification in the mail. They never asked for your financials. They didn't need them. Well, so if that weren't bad enough, that didn't keep everybody in their home. They did this new partial claim supplement program where you could just go delinquent. Let's say you went delinquent for 3 months. They would take that balance, put it on the back of the loan, a non-interest-bearing lien, to be paid off when you pay off the loan or sell the home. Well, let's say you don't pay again. You go back and tell them, I can't pay. They do it again. And you go back and you tell them, I can't pay, and they do it again. And my colleague, John Comiskey, has done the work on this, diving into these. And anybody who's had a partial claim is 5 to 7 times more likely to go delinquent again. I mean, that is just an unbelievable statistic. Yeah, it's like mind blowing. I recommend.
I can't think about that. I mean,
right. It's so insane. It's so insane. So then I'm convinced what we're soon going to hear about, because you can go out this program called Neighborhood Watch and look at the different originators that originate these loans. And look at their early stage delinquency. Anybody in mortgage knows that back then, we were all focused on early payment defaults. Oh my gosh, you know, because that is a sure sign of something going really, really wrong. Yeah. Well, there are certain originators who have like a 50% early payment default rate, which that's fraud. That's fraud. And what they're doing is they're coaching them. They're saying, listen, you don't ever have to pay this loan. Can you imagine? I'm an investor. I want to buy a house. Maybe I have a 680, 700 credit score. I can come up with that 3.5% because there's so many gurus out there that'll find you funding. You go take that loan out and then you don't have to pay it for 12 months, 18 months, 24 months. You just keep cycling it back. So, you know, what a dream, right? And so this isn't about primary homeowners being in trouble or financial dire straits, which is, you know, what the Biden administration wanted us to think it was about. And by the way, I'm firmly in the middle. I'm going to talk about both administrations here.
Sure.
And so the other thing is there was just no limit. You could take up to 30% of unpaid principal balance. So think about that.
That's crazy leverage. Mm-hmm. Go on, I'm interrupting you. Go ahead.
No, please do. Please do. Because this is so complicated. This gets so complicated. You know, I want your audience to understand, and I'm using a lot of crazy terms. So
okay, so I want to get this straight. So you're taking out a loan, you put 3.5% down, you don't ever really, air quotes, make a payment, or I can't make a payment, so you kick it down, and then you can take 30% equity out.
Correct.
And then you buy another home.
Oh, for sure. The Burr method, right? You know? Buy, rehab, refinance, repeat. Like, this is Burr. This is what every YouTube influencer out there was saying. And so, and they did it. They did it, Andy. I mean, you know, the famous Munger saying, you know, show me the incentives and I'll show you the outcome. And so, we have another big death cross, I call it, in mortgage, of a surge of 30 plus delinquency in June of 24. But these partial claims go to work, you know, just they suck it all up, as well as Fannie and Freddie, which is more your prime borrower. We'll talk about them. They're not going to be fine either. They had a 20% payment reduction modification that they announced. And that really caught all that early delinquency. And really, the only people that are truly going delinquent now are typically your investors who are walking away. I mean, they're always the first to strategically default. This is something I know from managing default. Okay, so, you know, it gets all sopped up. And then their last day in office, like right before the inauguration, they extend this program. Okay. Well, in April, there was a well-planted article in the Wall Street Journal that finally outed this program for what it was. And I mean, it's egregious. It's just so egregious. And I have to say, somebody handed that to them on a silver platter because nobody understands this stuff. Because at the same time, and this is where it gets into the macro and the systemic risk. So these non-banks are a big problem because they don't have deposits. What do they do?
Okay, non-banks like Rocket Mortgage.
Rocket.
What is a non-bank? I mean, we can certainly name names, but what exactly does that mean?
Well, they don't have any deposits, you know, so they're not a bank. They rely on our banks for a very large. So I was the only non-bank initially back in my company was during the GFC. We became a bank so we could get TARP money. We had a little bank, but so I know so much about what's happening in these non-banks, and so many people do not, because when you have those deposits, you can lend out that money. But when you're taking out large lending facilities, you have to make sure that, you know, that cost of funds makes sense, that you're getting interest income. So you have to charge a higher interest rate than you're paying. Okay. Whoops. COVID, the other thing that servicers have to do, so a non-bank can originate your loan and service your loan. That means they're taking your payment. But what servicers have to do in the government game is if you don't make your payment, they have to advance out the funds. If you don't pay your taxes and interest, they have to advance out the funds. People started freaking out about the non-banks right as COVID got started, because it's like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do if they're not paying? So some of the requirements were changed. You know, you only had to advance 4 months or things like that. But also the banks played along and, you know, gave them some good lending facilities to get all this done. Okay, well, so fast forward to the other thing this program did, Andy, is that you get an incentive as a servicer every time you do a loan modification. It's not a ton of money. It covers the costs. This business is very thin margin. But just think, the servicers just kept getting it over and over and over again. So, you know, if there were 10, they got 10 incentives. Okay, so come April, this article comes out. Me, a couple of others, Danielle DiMartino Booth, like hit the radio waves, like just screaming at the top of our lungs, because for the first time, people are wondering about this program. In fact, you can see congressional testimony when Pulte was confirmed. They're talking about that Wall Street Journal article, and it's hilarious because they say exactly what you say. We've got another subprime crisis on our hands. Scott Turner, Daniel wrote an open letter to him, quoting myself, John Comiskey, and they came out and they put limitations on the program. And basically, starting October 1st, a few things. One, you only get to go to the till one time every 24 months. That's it.
What do you mean, go to the till?
Like, let's say that 3 months of delinquency where you could just keep going over and over again.
You can only do that once.
Now you can only do it once. The second thing, you have to make trial payments, which should be a requirement was always a requirement, where you make those three payments, then you are officially into that modification. Okay. That shows you've got skin in the game, because what we all learn is if you have no skin in the game, you're not going to pay.
Right.
And so the other thing is, and this is where things get really scary for those that are paying attention, is that if you have delinquent student loans, you will not be eligible. Okay. 40% of FHA borrowers have student loans. I'm not saying they're delinquent, but if you're saying 40%, we're seeing a 10% delinquency. We think that's actually really low because we know there are servicers not reporting to credit right now, and they're kind of coming online to report. And so what happens is when these loans become 270 days delinquent, they go into a government system called KIVERS. And so what the servicers will have to do is check KIVERS to see if there's any delinquency or delinquent student loans, and then that will be a reason to deny this modification. Now, this is after we have trained all mortgage holders that they, of course, are entitled to some workout. I mean, I hear it all the time. I have people contacting me and I'm like, you're not getting a loan mod. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like, they just think this is a right now. And this was something we argued. As much as we wanted to help borrowers, we knew we could see what was really happening. And we're like, a loan modification is not a right. Right. You know, you sign a contract. So anyway, so come October 1, things are going to really change out there. And there's about 8 million FHA borrowers right now. They are a smaller piece of the pie. Go ahead. Looks like
you're... Well, I'm thinking this is D-Day, really. Obviously, maybe either, I mean, just through that time of October through January 1st, 2026.
Yeah. So what'll happen, I mean, this is where it gets so complicated, is like, if they fail, if they get that last partial claim, let's say September 30th, because I mean, these servicers, they're going to be pumping them. I mean, they know, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to save everybody they can. And so then let's say they call for their last one and they're told, yeah, you can do it, but they don't make their trial. Well, you have to wait that whole 3 months to see if they're going to make the trial. Then as well, you know, with the CFPB regulations that did not go away, regardless of, you know, what's happening, you have to wait 120 days to refer them. They have to be 120 days delinquent before you can refer them to foreclosure. So right now, what's been happening is there's been this big buildup behind the dam that's finally spilling over. Like, we're seeing foreclosure starts increase, things like that. Well, I mean, it's really building. And come October 1st, like, they're just going to start flowing over that dam through the cracks. But I would expect material foreclosures if there's no intervention. And Andy, I got to be honest, I think probably by January, they may extend the program because it's going to be that bad.
I would assume so. Yeah.
Right. Go ahead. We have to assume, right? We saw that they extended the deadline of forcing people in those zero payment student loan repayment plans into a paying one. They extended that deadline till after the midterm. So it's, I mean, yesterday I kind of lost it because Bessent came out and said, you know, we may be declaring a national emergency in housing. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, here we go. And I have some ideas of what they'll probably do. But anyway, whatever they do, there are so many people that are going to be in a predicament that they're not going to save it. Just like they didn't save, you know, 2009, that's when they started buying mortgage-backed securities the first time. It slowed everything down, but they could not save the housing market. By Q2 of 2026, we are going to have material delinquencies. And then you have Fannie and Freddie are going to start joining the party. And what do I mean by that? They have been furiously selling those non-performing loans. So they're already out there. And what was happening is you had these private note investors who would feed on the edges of this, and they would buy these loans up. And then you can do very aggressive workouts with them, like cash for keys, like, you know, get out of the house, we'll give you $15,000, and things you can't really do with the agencies. As well as you had this whole sub two movement support. Like, this is a big influencers out there, Pace Morby. Yep. Yeah. Like, where they come in, they don't tell the servicer, but they take over your payment and they tell you, hey, I'm going to find an investor to buy your house, but we'll take over your payments in the meantime. Well, guess what happens when that investor can't find somebody to buy that home in this environment? Because we're seeing the lowest sales we've seen in 30 years. So they walk away. And then they leave that borrower who is still on the note. You know, they leave that. And I'm talking to one right now. I contacted her hoping to get her on a show where she's on the hook. She has to pay. She's now 7,000 behind, underwater, all of it. So there's so much we don't know, Andy, because so much has been pushed to the shadows so that you couldn't see it. And so it's hard to say where we are. If I had to guess where we really are, it's probably more like really Q3, Q4 of 2007, early 2008. And so, you know.
That's right in the front of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask here. Let's talk about home prices. And my question to you is that they seem to be rolling over. What are your thoughts? But also, is this a regional thing? Because I hear horror stories. I live in Georgia, in Northeast Atlanta, if you would. But
oh, yeah.
I'm hearing horror stories in California, Florida, not hearing anything really, and some in Georgia, but not really hearing stuff in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a national thing like it was in 2007, or is it more regional to like Florida's of the world, the vacation areas of the world?
It's national. It's just going, it just takes time. So like what happened is people
are laughing at you.
Oh, I know you're not. I remember, so Ivy Zelman, you know, there was one market left standing during all of it. I mean, I had so many investors calling me, you know, asking me where to invest. And the Midwest was the last market left standing, you know, and so what you're seeing there is it's taking longer to turn, but we're starting to see it in, I believe, Cleveland and even Cincinnati with year-over-year price declines. I think it's one of those, don't quote me, but if not, both of them have month over month, which, and they're also starting to pile up inventory like we've seen in other locations. And the Northeast has also started piling inventory as well. Westchester County, you know, I'm talking to people there who thought they would be able to sell their house on Long Island, you know, and were not able to. And so this all just, and the Northeast is probably the most delusional because they've been told but they have terrible demographics. This is what people, it's like, and when you look at these, what I'll do is I'll take somebody who thinks something's a really strong market. I'll say, okay, let's take a little peek under the hood. There's a program out there. They don't sponsor me. It's called Property Radar. And you're able to see all the tax liens, owner liens, bankruptcies, divorces, pre-foreclosures. And they'll be like, oh, okay. Because, and then there's a lot of aging homeowners. I'm helping several people right now where they're in a situation where the house is in foreclosure. It was a parent's home. They've died. Something's happened. Like, one of the siblings took out a loan without telling anybody, or there's multiple kids and they just want to sell it. And, you know, they haven't been able to sell it. So there's different situations. So what's happening that you have the boomers own the most homes, right? And they are also, unfortunately, everybody gets upset when I say this, not what I want, but it's just reality. You know, between 2025 and 2035, we're going to lose 15.6 million of them per Harvard study. Between 2035, 2050, another, I think it's around 25 million. And so you're going to have a glut of supply. We already have 15 million vacant homes in this country. And that's not short-term rentals. That's just vacant homes. And so some of them could be second homes, but you actually track investment properties separately in that census survey, and it's about 3 million or so. People think there's about 2 million Airbnbs. There's probably a little bit more than that.
Well, I was going to say, so you have people coming out of home ownership, for lack of a better way to say it, through death. Again, baby boomers, my parents are baby boomers. Or it could be, as you said, you know, it could be just tragedy. It could be divorce. Mm-hmm. Many, many different things to coming out.
Right.
But I guess that goes somewhat counter to what I've been heard. I've heard the last several years that we have a housing shortage.
Yeah.
That is not the case. That is what you're saying. And then I want to tug on the leverage point of this. I see Airbnb being a part of this. They took up a lot of inventory, and you see that inventory coming on the market as well. Work that out for me.
Yeah, we already are. I mean, let me just tell you. I've been beaten up last few years because I wrote an article in January of 2023 called Debunking the Inventory Myth. Back then, everybody thought we had one. I was like, no. So let me ask you quickly before we go there. Andy, what do you think the average household size is in the United States as tracked by Fred right now, or the census?
I break that curve, but we won't use my own personal statistics. I'm going to say 4, wife and 2 kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Husband and 2 kids.
It's 2.5 right now.
So we have a decreasing population. I don't think you can sustain. Mm-hmm. It's not over 2.8, I think.
Yeah, we're not birthing at replacement rate right now. And so what happened, this is what so many people miss about the housing market. They talk about building, but it's like, look at the population. And I mean, and that's not even, we know we saw population growth for the first time. We saw it last year. But then when you looked at the numbers, it was all foreign. It was all immigration. And this isn't political. It's just what the numbers say.
Yeah.
And so now we don't have that. And you can't look at the permits because, just like every survey after COVID, you have reduced participation rate by the builders and by the counties for these permits. And then 2, you can build in unincorporated areas like places in Tennessee and Texas, Texas, Austin, outside of Austin, without a permit. And that's why I went on the road in January of 23 after I wrote that article. And if people were like throwing rotten tomatoes at me, you know, all over social media. Well, I was like, you know what? I can't prove it in the data, but I just knew it instinctually by reading just different things. And nobody was putting the whole picture together. They would get one aspect. Oh, we haven't built since the GFC. But they wouldn't look at the demographics, and that's why we had the most multifamily in progress without the since the 70s, without the demographics to support it, which will be another part of the story. But when I went on the road, I could see there was so much inventory not being reported. And I mean, I've gone deep down into why that is. We don't have to talk about it. But essentially, we have a ton of inventory out there. We have a ton of vacant inventory. And then the builders just went absolutely bananas. It was so funny. There's an article from 2009 when Lennar got its bailout, which they're probably going to get another bailout. That's probably why Buffett invested. They say, we built so many homes, like 30,000 delivered in 1 year. That was so crazy. We were so stupid. We will never do that again. And that's what they said on every earnings call from that time period. Well, they delivered something like 3 times that many in 1 year last year. So they just went bananas again. And what happens is I just don't think they look around. Like they don't look and see, oh, yeah, I'm building this. They don't go 2 roads over and see that there's another 10 of them. And I mean, so the inventory is mispriced because the sellers believe that their crappy 2-bedroom is worth like, $700,000 that they've done no repairs on because their Zestimate, I now call it, instead of the wealth effect, it's the Zest effect. They look at that Zestimate and they think they're millionaires. Then they tried to go sell it over the past 2 years and they didn't get anywhere.
Right.
And it's been frozen. And because of this FHA loan modification program, you didn't have delinquent loans coming to market forcing those reduced price comps. Well, that has started now. You're seeing people get their foreclosure notice and they turn around, they start slashing those prices, as well as private equity in your area owns a ton of long-term rental. Well, it has started in San Antonio and certain places where they have that kind of share. They've started like reducing very quickly and it's bringing down the comps. They don't care. They look at an Excel spreadsheet and it's like, they don't care about you. They don't care if you live next door. They're going to sell it at whatever they can sell. And for the longest time, they were kind of selling to each other because they were playing the Burr game to some extent as well. They would say, okay, American Home for Rent, like Lennar will say, will you buy like one of these communities? And they'll say, sure thing. And then they would sell to other entities, like one or two homes at a high price, but wasn't a real sell. Then they turn around to the bank and say, here's my comps. Give me a loan. And this has been the game. This has been the game. But now that game is up because nobody's buying. And you're going to start to see in areas like yours, the impact as they start selling these things, because they have to, because property insurance and taxes mm-hmm. have completely squeezed them, and they were over levered, you know? And so as we know, like Blackstone gated redemptions in 2022, they've been paying, but that's likely because, you know, they got bailed out with the California pension plan, like, but the game is up. And so,
and it's hitting right now.
Yeah, it's hitting right now. And so the Northeast, because there is just so much delusion there, it's taking longer, but it's starting to happen. You're starting to see it in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and places like that. The Midwest, it looks like they're going to be last this time, but it's starting as well. Because so much, just like you say, you believed, I mean, everybody believed in this shortage narrative. We've been living on narrative. I mean, that's it.
Right.
That's all that this, because you can look at the historical charts. You know, housing is about, if you calculate it, it depends on how you calculate it, between 12 and 20% of GDP. And so housing has been used, I think, since the late 80s to really start to juice the economy. But you can look mm-hmm. over time that return is just going down. Like you can look at the contribution of construction to real GDP, and we never hit those GFC levels. We never hit the same origination levels. And so we've run out of buyers, which, by the way, it wasn't you and me. It was investors were the kind of the last gasp of the housing market. And they can't buy now because it doesn't make any sense, because the leverage doesn't make any sense. Last year was the lowest on record for first time home buyer participation since they started tracking in the 80s. And so it's just been so bizarre to me to watch people not see what's happening. Like, and I think it's a lot of our financial media, we talk about month over month, year over year. I mean, all the time, right? Like, well, last year, but we don't look at things, you know, in the financial media, mainstream, I should say, like 20, 30 years. So it's very easy to see this when you pull out and you can look and say, okay, no, we're not getting there. And so now you have just completely priced out your first time home, the people that need to buy homes for shelter.
Right.
And what they've already gone, right? They've already been renting. That's why rent prices were going up so much, is because nobody could afford to buy a home. Well, that was before all of these apartment deliveries, because not only did we build like crazy apartments that I've seen all over this country, Andy, I mean, like empty, big Evergrande style multifamily luxury, because that was the other thing. Everybody thought everybody was getting rich, and there was way more rich people in the United States than there really were. But they also did these things called built for rent, which were single family homes that they built specifically to rent. Crappy building. And so we have so much supply out there. I've driven almost 20,000 miles now looking at these cities all over the country, and people will say, well, no, you know, we don't have overbuilding in the Northeast. Let me tell you, every piece of land they could find, every infill, they started building. And you can see it if you take the train from New York, like to Philly. You can see all the apartments. You can see it all along. And so we just completely overbuilt. And so we don't have a housing unit shortage. We have a shortage of available homes, of affordable homes, because people are delusional. And they've been fed this narrative for all since COVID, for 5 years, and they believe it. And so... Yeah. But it will be national, because you can just look at household median income. So looking at, even if you say, okay, it's really like 83,000 or something like that, you know, you would be able to afford a house around 300,000. And really, if you were being being safe about it, maybe 275,000. Okay. The median home price, according to the National Association of Realtors, right now is 420,000 or so. The new home price is actually much lower, like around 407,000. Now, that's a historic flip. That had happened one time in June of 2005.
I'm in shock.
Right. So on average, since 2012, new homes are $50,000 more expensive than an existing home.
Sure. That would make sense.
That would make sense. So one time in history, June of 2005. Well, then in 24, month after month, you started to see it. It would flip back and forth because they would revise numbers. But we are now squarely there. On top of the fact that the builders are doing things like buying down rates. And so they'll either as a one-time contribution, they'll put in cash to say, we're going to buy down your rate, or they'll let you do what's called a 3-2-1, where you just kind of adjust. It's basically like an arm. It's not, but it's like an arm.
I was going to say, it sounds like an arm.
Exactly. So it's like, okay. They really started doing those in July of 2022. So you're starting to see those really reset right now.
And why would they do that now, right? In a great market, they don't have to.
Right. I mean, there's so many red flags. It's so funny how, I mean, I thought I was crazy. I really did, because everybody was telling me I was crazy. And so I was like, okay, well, everybody's always calling me, you know, I'm just crazy, right? But no, I mean, these are just facts and math, yeah, and things like that. It's common sense. Like, we've had the worst housing market since the 90s, and we've increased population since like 2007, like by 20%, or maybe that's from 2000. But it's like, that's insane. That's insane. I do think there's a private market out there that's not being tracked. But again, we should be seeing home sales much higher than that. But that's not happening. And so go ahead.
If the Fed lowers rates, are they going to have any impact on this? Is that a Fed problem?
I say go ask September 2024, right? So what happened? Basically, they do a jumbo rate cut, and mortgage rates had been front running. You know, that was at least what everybody was saying at the time. Mm. You know, the bond market's very calm. I don't think any of us can figure out exactly what's that. But they said, you know, it was front running. Then he did that rate cut. And oh my, like, mortgage rates just took off like a rocket again, going up, 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 up. And so, no, the Fed does not control mortgage rates. I feel like what do you think? Do you think they're going to cut in September?
Yeah, I think it's all baked in the cake, but right. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. So why isn't the bond market like, why isn't it going?
There's other problems.
Yeah, right. Right. And so it's so funny to me. Everybody thinks they know. They just know. They know exactly. It's like, no, you don't know. None of us really know. And so I'm just watching. I think I'm stealing this from somebody that I can't remember who it is. But I'm at this point, I can't say what's going to happen. I can only call balls and strikes, right? I can just say, whoa, we have just been, you know, at this 4.3, 4.4 on the 10-year, you knew what I was talking about. We've been here, and that's what mortgage rates closely align with. We've just been stuck, you know, and I was really hoping we'd get that same little relief rally, right? Like, so that, because what happened last year was you all of a sudden non-seasonally, because, you know, housing is very seasonal. We started seeing inventory grow when those rates started coming down, because I think our delusional sellers were like, oh, my chance, you know, let me list that property. And so I was really hoping we'd see it again this year, because I think we got down as low as 6.08% mortgage rate this time last year. But no, we've just been stuck here. I want it, but it's just not happening, you know, because I do want the inventory to come to market. I want people to get out of their, because what you've had in 23, 24 was what I would call motivated selling. It was people that they were motivated, but they could afford to hang on, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, what you're seeing in 2025 is motivation turned to distress. Many of them can't hang on, but there's still plenty of boomers that have 2, 3, 4 homes that are like, okay, look, I think my crappy 2-bedroom is worth $700,000. I'm going to wait until, you know, it's better. Everybody keeps telling them, mortgage rates are going down. And so that's what my hope was. But we seem to be stuck this morning. You know, we were seeing, it was like last week, we got a little bit, you know, it was floating lower, lower, lower. But this morning, it could be different right now. We went back to that 4.3 or very close to it. And so I don't think the Fed has no control. And right now, the bond market doesn't seem to care about this theoretical upcoming cut.
Yeah. And if you marry it too with what you just said, we have two problems. Well, we have many problems, but the two biggest problems that I see, we have an inventory problem, too much inventory. So it really doesn't matter what are you going to buy? More houses again?
Exactly.
And we have a demographic problem.
Right.
So those are really what's hitting. So, Melody, I think we should land the plane there. I want to do two things. Give a shout out of your Substack first, and I'll say some more words about you.
Okay, sure. So my Substack, M3_Melody Substack. And that's where I really dive in to these narratives with data, lots of data. So even the free version, guys, I put a lot of data because I think this is a personal mission for me. I'm passionate because I have seen so many people get wrecked by taking out a loan they cannot afford, lose their home, lose their family. So, you know, I do a lot in the free version so that you guys can at least get the tools to understand how to navigate what's ahead.
Yes. And also want to give a shout out. Melody was so gracious to me, to all my viewers and listeners. And Melody, you were requested by so many people, so my viewers and listeners, which was surprising to me. Not indicative of your work. That shouldn't be surprising, but indicative just because this is on everybody's mind. So to all of you that recommended and wanted me to bring Melody on, here you go. And I'm so glad that you did. And also, yeah, you've been quite, for all the right reasons, you're becoming well-known in this space. And I would love to have you on again soon to talk about this, just because it impacts really just the national economy here and really in local economy. So I'd love to have you on again soon.
It would be my pleasure. And thank you so much for having me.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.